Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
We're here with Sean Scanlon, Connecticut comptroller. I don't know about you, because you have all these obligations, right, to events you have to go to. But like this time of year, it's like holiday this, fundraiser that, and go to this. And we were just talking, the governor has his media thing tonight. And I just feel like an awkward teenager sometimes at these things, because I'm in a conversation with somebody I want to talk to, but I don't want to talk to him for 45 minutes.
You got to learn how to get in and get out.
Yeah. And so like I usually just go in, make sure I shake the governor's hand, say hello, have a couple conversations. I constantly do laps. Like, I don't stop. And then the second I feel just a touch awkward, I just go. And I mean, as a Jewish guy, I'm appropriating. I am like one of the best Irish goodbye people on the planet. I just go.
Yeah.
I won't even say thank you or anything. I just leave. Because I don't want to stay on too long. And I certainly don't want to stay in a conversation too long. Do you have a lot of stuff this time of year? Do you have to, or is it just normal day-to-day stuff you're always doing?
It's just normal. There's like parties and stuff, but you know, you pick and choose what you go to and what you have to go to. And
do you ever have days where you can just like stay in your office and do work?
Yeah. All the time.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't have like news conferences and appearances?
Maybe I have something to go to in the middle of the day, but I come and go back, right? I'm in my office almost every day, at least for some part of the day.
But do you have days where you can just be there and work?
Absolutely. And I'll have 14 meetings back to back to back to back to back to check in on different projects. And
that's another thing. As a manager, like, how efficient are your meetings? Because part of the reason I love this job, some weeks I'll have one required meeting. And I think meetings are so inefficient and so sometimes unproductive.
Most of the meetings that I have are efficient except for one, which is the scheduling meeting that I do. And I'm looking over at somebody who's with me today, Maddie, who knows that those become like freewheeling sessions where we just kind of talk about everything and it's very casual. But most of the meetings where it's about policy or I have to make a decision, I feel like are pretty, you know, pretty good.
Are you running all of them?
I like to think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't like meetings. But if there's a clear intent, I think there are some meetings you go in, you know, it can be fun and frivolous, but then I'm just like, I'm leaving.
See, I like meetings more than emails. I feel like my inbox just gets so bogged down and chains go on and on and on, and there's no definality of it. I love to have people in. I'm also one of these people who calls customer service lines still. I don't do chats. I don't do emails. I always like to call and talk to a real
hard
person.
Hard to find people.
Just keep pressing zero. Somebody's going to answer.
So what's going on? You know, this, I guess we can start with this. I mean, there's so many issues to talk about, but the surplus was a number, and then 4 weeks later, that number was cut in half. And because it's all projections, and then there's real numbers in terms of what comes in. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, basically, you got it. And I think that there's big changes this month, good and bad.
I think because of stock market?
First of all, the reason why the surplus was cut significantly really has to do with two things. And that's number one, the One Big Beautiful Bill changed the corporate tax and basically changed how companies can respond to that. So instead of phasing it in over a couple of years, the change allowed it to happen.
And it shows up literally like overnight.
Yeah, it's over $100 million loss to us in terms of revenue, right? And the second one is that our Medicaid program, like every Medicaid program in the United States, is just the costs are crazy right now. And we have an $85 million deficiency in that program in this projected deficit month. But despite the huge change and $100 million loss in revenue on the corporate tax side and an overage on Medicaid, we still are projecting to have a surplus.
Now, these are different than the volatility surpluses, correct?
Totally different, yeah.
These are just within the current budget.
That's within the budget, yep.
And then the transportation side of it, that number changed too, but that number went up. How does where's the volatility there?
Well, that the STF is a bigger problem because the STF, while
the
it
STF
did go,
is
the Special Transportation Fund.
Okay, which goes to?
Transportation projects.
Ongoing?
Ongoing.
Okay.
History there in 30 seconds. Minas River Bridge collapses in the 80s. Governor O'Neill at the time says, we ought to put together a fund that's going to allow us to make infrastructure improvements. They said all the gas tax money and all the DM fees are going to go into it. For 30 plus years, that worked. But now we have a problem as cars become more fuel efficient. We get less and less money in gas tax revenue.
Interesting.
We've also cut DMV fees because everybody hates the DMV and everybody hates DMV fees. So we've scaled those back as the state. So there's less and less money going into this fund, which means that the fund is projected to have serious problems in the next couple of years. A couple of years ago, the governor had said, hey, I see this coming down the road. Let's talk about other sources of revenue that can go into this, like tolls. And that didn't happen, but that didn't mean the problem went away. And we're going to face that problem in a couple of years, but nobody wants to talk about it.
But it's a surplus.
It's a surplus right now of $25 million. It's not $25 billion.
Right.
And that number changes almost every month based on what federal grants come in. Sometimes those go away and get canceled, and sometimes they're on the books. It's all very different. But the main problem that we face is that the workhorse of that fund is the gas tax, and the gas tax is going down and down.
Interesting. Sean Scanlon, Connecticut Comptroller. We'll talk about some partisan politics, maybe some tax cuts in just a minute, or maybe even UConn football. We're back with Sean Scanlon, Connecticut Comptroller. I almost want to do like a you can sort of guess, you know, take from the carousel. I will say, on the backside of the surplus conversation. We're in election year. By the way, have you declared or whatever?
I have not formally declared.
Are you going to do this for 4 more years?
I'm inclined to do it, but I haven't formally declared yet.
Okay, so and you have to run, right?
I do.
Do you want to just what's the difference between
today is not the day, Brian? But
because you need to do a press event.
No, because listen, I'm not focused on the campaign right now. I hate to sound like the governor who dragged this out for a long time, but once we get through the holidays in January, I plan to.
But you're inclined to keep working at this job?
Absolutely. I love this job.
Okay. What other job would you want to do?
The only other one that I would ever want to do is governor.
Yeah, right. And that's
I've been pretty honest with you about that.
No, I know. I get
past conversations.
I get it, but there's nothing outside of those two.
No, I have no desire to go to Washington. I love the job I do every day because A, I get to go home at night and hang out with my kids, and B, I get to do stuff every day. And in Connecticut, you still can do stuff, and there's only one job in the state where you can do real substantial stuff every single day and make a difference, and that's governor.
Yeah, and I think the governor is a way better job than anything in D.C., to be quite honest. It being an executive, you know what I mean? It's just you have a more of an ability to impact more people. We're getting into an election year, and the surplus is an issue, and I've talked about it for years now. Why not? And we've talked about it, the two of us. You need me? I need to get my.
No, it's fine. I'm handing Brian notes here. No, I'm showing him the wrong thing here.
Oh, I see. I saw that. Should we be returning more money to taxpayers? We have obviously huge issues with property taxes. We have huge surpluses. It seems like we're sort of clawing away maybe at the rainy day fund at some point, but should we be talking about tax cuts?
Yeah, I think so. I've always been somebody who believes we should be cutting taxes more for people, especially working class people. Not to get too wonky, but we did these tax incidence studies a couple of years ago when I was in the legislature and chaired the tax committee that basically showed that most people in the state that make less than $70,000, which is 70% of people, pay more in taxes than those at the top. Yeah. So we have these big debates, especially in my party, about do we need to tax the rich? Do we need to do this? No, I think we just need to rebalance the tax code. And that means we should be cutting taxes for working class and middle class people. And the governor has done that. But if you ask most people in Connecticut, has your income tax gone down? They're going to tell you no.
Right.
I think we need to keep doing that. And I think that there is bipartisan consensus right now. I saw my friend Vinny Candelora yesterday being quoted as saying this. Steve Harding has said that. And I think there is a consensus about it. How we do it, I think, is the most important thing.
Well, I mean, do the Democrats in leadership at the Capitol share that? Because I don't see them saying it to the degree that you would. So do you have those conversations with your Democratic colleagues?
I think what some of my Democratic colleagues said in that report was we just have to make sure that those tax cuts can be sustainable. There's nothing worse than doing a big tax cut in an election year.
You don't want to swing one way.
Yeah, then, just to say, oh, we did it. We cut your taxes. And then a year from now, you say, wait a minute, I'm sorry. It's not an election year anymore. We're going to take that back. You have to be able to sustain that. And for better or worse, doing a substantial cut to the income tax, for example, or the sales tax costs hundreds of millions of dollars. And so it's been hard.
It doesn't cost. You just get less revenue.
Well, I'm saying in the minds of people at the Capitol, there is a cost that you then say, okay, if we want to cut the sales tax by a percentage point and go from 6.35 to 5.35, that's like a $300 million revenue hit to the state.
Right.
And they have to make that up somehow.
They have to make it up? If you have surplus, that's the point. If you have $4 billion and you're taking in hundreds of millions extra, why do you have to make up for it?
Well, two reasons. Number one, the surplus per the rules of the fiscal guardrails doesn't just go back always into the general fund. It usually goes into the
pay down the pension liabilities.
Rainy day fund. Yeah. And if the rainy day fund is full, it goes to pay down the pension debt. But the second thing is we are, as you know, better than most people who follow this stuff, potentially heading into economic difficult times.
Correct.
And while we have a $4 billion rainy day fund, and we think that we need about two to get through a recession, if you pair a bad recession or the bubble from AI bursting and a lot of federal cuts, you could quickly find yourself in a position where we need that surplus just to get by.
So then that brings up the $500 million.
Yeah.
Were you in favor of peeling that off and putting it? Because I know there are some stipulations if you don't use it, but the rainy day fund now seems untouchable. Because it's a rainy day, but you're going to add $500 million to deal with the rain.
My position is I think the fiscal guardrails that we put in place in 2017 did what they were supposed to do, which was to end the immediate fiscal crisis that we were in, right, where we were just taking on water as a state and as a state budget.
You're in favor of tweaking.
When they come up for reauthorization in 2028, I do think that we should have a more holistic bipartisan conversation about did we get this right and are the guardrails as constructed today still the guardrails we need going forward? And back to the tax cutting thing, I think there's a bipartisan consensus now that perhaps we are saving too much money. And when I tell people there's a $4 billion rainy day fund, they said, hey, that's great. Congratulations. But what do you do with that money? Because it's raining in my life, right?
Right.
And I think we have to continue having a rainy day fund for all the reasons we've just been talking about. But I do think that we can figure out a way to do it. My idea is they made a mistake when they calculated the volatility cap. This is basically the thing that sets aside some of the Wall Street money.
Yep.
They based it on 1 year instead of doing a 5 or 10 year average. And the year they based it on happened to be very unrepresentative when it came to volatility. So if in 28 we change to a 5 or 10 year average, it would free up like $500 million that we don't really need to be saving. And with that money, knowing that that's pretty stable because we've been collecting it for about 10 years, I think you could do a significant tax decrease.
Yeah. I mean, the volatility cap hasn't been that volatile. I mean, it's really, really fascinating to watch this stuff. I mean, the 2017 deal came into place before I was here. We have to pause here with Sean Scanlon, the Connecticut comptroller. I do want to talk about the Democratic Party, like nationally.
Yeah.
You know, in the wake of Tennessee yesterday and Mamdani and some other things, I'd like to touch on housing, maybe the Ben Proto op-ed, maybe even UConn football, but I don't know if we'll have time for everything. Sean Scanlon, Connecticut comptroller, joining us in studio. I want to talk about the party, because there's like all this good and bad. You had this off-year election that seemed to really gain a lot of ground and momentum. The shutdown really seemed to be more of a net negative for Democrats. Mamdani wins. Obviously, there are so many little forces going on here. I don't think overnight the Democratic Party all of a sudden became perfectly in sync after this election. But I also, I don't know if it's they were a total disaster either. I don't see a lot of good leadership in Congress. I'm just curious about where you stand right now about the party broadly.
Well, I think where we stand as a party broadly is that we're a big tent party. And I think the reason why we did well in Connecticut, there was almost 30 towns that flipped from red to blue in Connecticut, is because we are a party of both sides, right? You had two moderate women elected governors of Virginia and New Jersey. People focus on Mamdani a lot and say, you know, he's the new Democratic boogeyman that everyone is associated with. But he ran a great campaign where he flipped people who had voted for Donald Trump in New York City to vote for him by focusing relentlessly on affordability, which is the message that every politician, Democrat or Republican, is talking about right now. Because,
but is it excitement for the Democrats and what they stand for, or is it more of a vote against what's happening in a Republican-controlled federal government?
I don't buy that it's just about that. I think that that is Donald Trump is the best motivating force in the Democratic Party. There's no question about that. But I think a lot of real people, and I mean this nicely, 80% of people in our society don't watch endless cable news and don't focus on what's happening in Washington every day and tweet each other and yell at each other. They're just trying to go about their lives. And I think those 80% of people see Democratic candidates talking about things that are important to them, like schools and roads and bridges and public spaces. And they like what our message is locally, and they voted for Democrats locally. I don't think that there was a lot of people voting for the new first selectman in Southbury or Brooklyn, these places that we picked up these seats, that are solely voting against Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think the Republican, you know, we can get to Proto in a second. The Republican problem here is there's a lot of good Republicans in Connecticut. They're just not running for office. And I think they're not putting enough good candidates. I believe in competitive government. I don't think Connecticut's competitive enough. It needs to be more competitive. If you were in a position where you're endorsing...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan, equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If it mattered, would you have endorsed Mamdani?
If I was at the Connecticut Comptroller, or if I was the Comptroller of New York City?
No, if your endorsement mattered, and if you needed to give one, would you have endorsed him?
I historically always support the Democratic nominee of my party for different offices, and so my position would be to continue to support the
Democratic
candidate.
Would you have supported him in the Democratic primary?
No, I mean, I don't typically involve myself in primaries, and I certainly don't live in New York City or involve myself there, but I think he ran a great campaign. He obviously
won. It's touchy, right? You don't want to commit to.
I'm not like dancing around it. I think he's a really strong messenger and communicator and an important voice in our party. Do I agree with him on every single issue? No, I do not. But do I think that he ran a good campaign focused on the issue that I think we all need to focus on more, affordability? Yes, I do. And I think that that is a template that can be replicated in other places, right? Spanberger, Mickey Sherrill, these people all ran very different campaigns, and there are very different kinds of people. The blessing and the curse of the Democratic Party is how big our tent is. It makes it very, very hard to be a cohesive party because we are so different. The Republican Party is less that. They are more of a cult of personality around one person, and that one person dictates where they go ideologically. We are not like that. We have a lot of fights. There's a lot of things I agree with some people in my party on. There's a lot of things I disagree with on, but we're still one party. That doesn't happen in the other party.
You know, with Mamdani, I look at it almost like Trump. I think that's why they kind of got along in some ways, that you know, I feel like Trump should get an opportunity to implement his economic, whether it's good or bad, like he won and Mamdani won.
Yeah.
So he gets the opportunity to implement it. And I don't understand why Republicans were so forcefully against it, in the sense that if what he does is a failure, then that concept gets pushed away for a generation.
Well, right? They want him. Trump wants him. That, you know, weird thing that they did in the White House aside, where he was complimentary of him.
Because
he wants him as the boogeyman. If he didn't want him to win, I was talking about a friend of mine who's a Republican, one of my best friends lives in New York City, and he was saying, why is Trump not getting Sliwa out of this race and trying to clear the field? I said, because he doesn't want Sliwa to get out of the race. He wants Mamdani to win because they want to be able to point and paint every one of us as Mamdani.
You mean, who's us? You mean?
Democrats.
Right, I'm not a Democrat.
Yeah, by the way. I'm saying us. Us meaning me.
Got it.
Right? Okay. They want to be able to have a boogeyman, just like Democrats want Trump to be the boogeyman. But I think people see through that.
Interesting. We'll see. My point is, we'll see. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. And if it works, maybe you learn from it. You know, I don't agree with a slew of things that he wants to do either, but I think he won the election.
He did.
And that says something. I have four more things to get to with Sean Scanlon, the comptroller here. I doubt I'll get to all four. Quickly on UConn football, I guess the question to start with, is it sort of institutionally important for the state of Connecticut to really invest in Division I major college football?
I think UConn is a really important thing to our state, and I think UConn athletics is really important to our state. And so, yeah, I do, and I was really disappointed to see him leave.
You think – I mean, do you blame him?
I do.
Why? I mean, he's got
– I think anybody who's a leader who changes the culture of an organization and gets people to buy into that culture change, and they start winning and they start believing in each other, the fans are coming back, everyone is feeling that, and you walk away from that just because you think there is more attention being paid to you at some other school or in some other market, I just think that that makes what you were saying for a couple of years
hollow.
Fake.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think you're right in the sense that I was so happy the Vanderbilt's coach stayed at Vanderbilt. And, you know, and what Kiffin did at Ole Miss, like, why can't you just stay at Ole Miss and be a legend?
Yeah.
Why do you have to go to this job? And
yeah.
With Mora, I mean, he's allowed to do whatever he wants, but it would have been nicer if he could have stayed for the rest of his career and built upon that. I don't blame him, because I understand he wants to be at a place where football is number one and he's got a stadium that's on campus.
I get it, but the dude is not 38, right?
Right.
He's at the end of his career. And he could have stayed and built this program into something more special, continue the momentum, and he decided to leave. And I think that that's really disappointing, not just for the fans, but for his players.
But now that he's gone, because he was not a unicorn, but he was pretty rare in the sense that his bona fides stacked up to, you know, to getting him to come here. Do you think we need to invest in players and a multi-million-dollar coach? And
yeah, but this is the problem with some of the changes with like NIL and stuff. Players just leave, right? I saw we had a quarterback that had committed for Mora. Now he's gone, right? He's probably going with him to Colorado State. So, you know, you have to be in this thing. I think it's good and bad for college sports, but I do think football matters to us. I'm disappointed that he left, but I think we got to find a good coach and keep the momentum going.
Yeah, I'd like to talk more about it, but we don't have time. This issue of housing in Connecticut, I know you're not involved at the legislature, but I'm sure you read in and talked to people. Do you think that this housing bill is going to help? Because the Republicans are looking me in the eye and say, we actually don't have a crisis. This is a made-up thing.
Yeah, I don't get that. I think that it is a crisis. It's a big problem. And
what is the crisis? We don't have enough?
Yeah, I think we need to build 100,000 new units of housing. If we want to set ambitious goals, which I think the state needs to do it, I think we need to say we need to build 100,000 new units of housing in this state to meet the needs that are out there. How I would differ, though, I think the bill is good, and I would have supported the bill if I was a legislator. I would have signed it if I was governor. But I think the thing that I would say we should do differently is there's that song, I Can't Make You Love Me If You Don't, right? If your town doesn't want to build affordable housing, we shouldn't be forcing them to do it. But there are towns that want to do it. Justin Ellicott would take every dollar of state money we could get and build affordable housing in his city. And if you want to do that, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's not make everyone love us. Let's build it where people want to build it. And that's where people are going to want to live. And that's how we can make a better Connecticut. Trying to force square peg into a round hole just for the sake of saying we're going to have affordable housing in Hampton, I don't think that we need to do that.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a bigger conversation. I think Ellicott is smart in the sense that Hartford's biggest problem is that not enough people live there, you know, and the more people that live in New Haven, the better it is for New Haven, because they're going to use the stores and they're going to spend their money.
And the better that is for Connecticut.
Yeah, I feel like in some ways, New Haven, their opportunity is really, really, I mean, there's a lot of upside potential, obviously. And I think it's because to have a city that has that university there is huge. But Ben Proto, excuse me, he wrote this op-ed in The Current. And I think essentially, it's a good segue from housing because it's an affordability issue, right?
Yeah.
So it's a perfect segue because essentially his point is this affordability issue as it relates to Connecticut. He says that it's a problem that Democrats created and now Democrats are trying to solve it. And
yeah,
that's a very Trumpian thing to do, right? I mean, and so if it's true, and so what's your counter to that?
My counter to that is every politician wants to talk about affordability today. The question that you should evaluate as a voter is how long have they been talking about that? And did that start before that became a buzzword 5 minutes ago? I have lived affordability in my life because I was raised by a single mom who ran a small business. She always had a problem paying for groceries. She always had a problem paying the rent. I never lived in a house that was purchased until I was 30 years old and bought my own house, my wife. I have seen what is going on with people. And I think other politicians who have seen that, who talk about it credibly, should be believed. I think right now, saying that Democrats can't talk about affordability because of the dystopian nightmare that Connecticut is, in the words of Ben Proto in that op-ed, is silly.
But we have a multiple decades of Democrat gubernatorial leadership and now Democrat dominance at the state capitol.
I know, but the idea that says you've been in power for 30 years and you haven't solved every problem, therefore you can't talk about the problems you want to solve, is a stupid argument in my mind.
Okay.
I think people should evaluate what people are saying and what issues they want to solve. In my mind, you and I have talked about this every time I've been on your show for years, it's too expensive to get housing, healthcare, energy, childcare in our state. That doesn't mean that we aren't working to solve that problem, but those are hard problems to solve. And I think you're going to continue seeing people put out ideas to make that better. And that's what we're going to have an election on next year. And people should be judged on what their plans are to attack affordability in our state.
So you're acknowledging there is a massive affordability problem. You're just countering that it's not like something that, A, that it's not like Democrats are not trying to solve it. And you're saying the Democrats didn't create it.
Well, look at Donald Trump. Donald Trump ran and was elected president of this country by saying he was going to make Connecticut and the United States more affordable and change it. He hasn't done that in a year because it's not easy to do.
Right.
Right? It's difficult to change these things. We are the land of steady habits. We just had a huge fight for months over a housing bill that is one piece of that puzzle. Change takes time. But I think the important thing for people to know is we understand that there are needs out there and we want to fix them and we are, but it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, I'm pretty convinced that, and we got to go, energy is to me like becoming the number, it's almost like the number one issue more than like even housing for me, because it's something important from a corporate perspective and from a household perspective. And like, I don't know how we do it, but there's got to be a reason why Connecticut is more expensive than our cohort.
Like, how we do it is to say we want to get to renewables. We want to get to green energy, but that's going to take time and we need a bridge to get us there. And we can't wait 5-10 years for relief. If gas can be a bridge to get us there, we should get more gas. At the same time, we're doubling down on a renewable package. We can't afford to just
do nothing.
It's
hard to do in today's climate. Yeah.
It's hard, but listen, 80% of the people in our state are for that because they're for whatever lowers their bill. And if we can credibly say we have a plan to get us to a better way of doing it down the road, but we need to do something in the short term, I think most people in the state buy into that, and I think you'd see a lot of support for it.
If I don't see you, have a great holiday.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everybody listening.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads.